Section 1. Listening Comprehension. In this section of the test, you will have an opportunity to demonstrate your ability to understand conversations and talks in English. There are three parts to this section, with special directions for each part. Answer all the questions on the basis of what is stated or implied by the speakers in this test. When you take the actual TOEFL test, you will not be allowed to take notes or write in your test book. Try to work on Practice Test D in the same way. Part A, Directions. In Part A, you will hear short conversations between two people. After each conversation, you will hear a question about the conversation. The conversations and questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Here is an example. On the recording, you hear,
"I don't like this painting very much."
"Neither do I."
What does the man mean? In your book, you read, A. He doesn't like the painting either. B. He doesn't know how to paint. C. He doesn't have any paintings. D. He doesn't know what to do. You learn from the conversation that neither the man nor the woman likes the painting. The best answer to the question, "What does the man mean?" is A. He doesn't like the painting either. Therefore, the correct choice is A. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part A with the first conversation. Number 1.
"You know, the noise in my dorm has really gotten out of control. My roommate and I can rarely get to sleep before midnight."
"Why don't you take the problem up with the dorm supervisor?"
What does the man suggest the woman do? Number 2.
"That's a nice computer you have."
"Now all I have to do is figure out how to use it."
What does the man imply? Number 3.
"Your little nephew is growing by leaps and bounds."
"Yes, he must be at least 3 feet tall already."
What do the speakers say about the woman's nephew? Number 4.
"Deborah says she's going to stay up all night studying for her exam tomorrow morning."
"Wouldn't she be better off getting a good night's sleep so she'll feel fresh in the morning?"
What does the man imply? Number 5.
"Did you pick up your letter at the post office?"
"No, I got my roommate to do it."
What happened to the letter? Number 6.
"Have you asked your brother to do the dishes?"
"Thousands of times."
What does the man mean? Number 7.
"Tom and I are having a party next week. We wondered if you and Jill would be free to join us."
"Sounds great, but I'd better talk to Jill before we say yes."
What does the man imply?
Number 8. Hi, I see you're walking. Where's your bicycle today?
Oh, I bent the wheel yesterday, so I had to take it to the shop.
What does the woman mean? Number 9.
Joe took a taxi home alone 10 minutes ago.
I wonder why he didn't wait for me to go with him.
What does the woman mean? Number 10.
I hear your older sister is on the Olympic team and on the honors list. She must be quite a person.
She sure is. I've always looked up to her.
What does the man say about his sister? Number 11.
What a morning. My train usually takes 45 minutes, but today it took me over an hour to get to campus.
I saw signs in the station that construction would be going on for the next 3 months.
What can be inferred from the conversation? Number 12.
On my way up to your office, I found this briefcase in the elevator. What do you think I should do?
Take it to the receptionist. The lost and found box is there.
What does the man suggest the woman do? Number 13.
Could you please tell me where I can find a CD by the Beatles?
Sure. It would be over there with all the CDs in pop rock. They're arranged alphabetically by group.
In what kind of store does this conversation take place? Number 14.
Have you heard that Professor Jones is retiring?
Yes. The faculty won't find anyone to fill her shoes.
What does the woman imply about Professor Jones? Number 15.
What a wonderful performance. The marching band has never sounded better.
Thanks. I guess all those hours of practice are finally paying off.
What does the woman mean? Number 16.
What's Laura doing here today? I thought she was supposed to be out of the office on Mondays. She decided she'd rather have Fridays off instead.
What can be inferred about Laura? Number 17.
I've got a coupon for half-off dinner at that new restaurant down the street. I think I'll use it when my cousin comes for a visit this weekend.
Where did you get it? I wouldn't mind trying that place out, too.
What does the man want to know? Number 18.
I'm thinking of getting a new printer.
I'd invest in a laser printer. The print quality is much better.
What does the woman mean? Number 19.
We've got a whole hour before the Browns come by to pick us up.
Yeah, but we better get moving.
What does the woman suggest they do? Number 20.
Do you still want to go to graduate school after you get out of college?
I've changed my mind about that. I want to start working before I go back to school.
What does the woman mean? Go on to the next page. Number 21.
I just heard there are going to be showers on and off all weekend.
There goes the picnic.
What does the man mean? Number 22.
I'm getting worried about Jennifer. All she talks about these days is her volleyball team, and all she does is practice.
Her grades will fall for sure. Let's try to find her after dinner and talk some sense into her.
What are the speakers probably going to tell Jennifer? Number 23.
I'm not sure that Mike will be able to find an apartment before school starts, even though he's been looking for weeks.
Frankly, I think the odds are against him at this point.
What does the man mean? Number 24.
I'm not accustomed to using a gas stove.
It's simple. Just turn the knob until the burner lights, then adjust the flame.
What is the man going to do? Number 25.
I must admit that since I started exercising, I've been feeling less tired.
What did I tell you?
What does the man mean? Number 26.
The subway sure is packed this morning.
Yeah, it's a pain, but if we all drove every day, we wouldn't be able to breathe in this city.
What does the woman imply? Number 27.
This room is freezing.
You can say that again.
What does the woman mean? Number 28.
I'm really sorry my article didn't make the deadline. I guess I held up everything, huh?
Well, not exactly, but I wouldn't look for it in this month's newsletter.
What does the woman imply? Number 29.
If you could, would you trade places with your sister?
Yeah, she's got it made.
What does the woman mean? Number 30.
Don't you want to have dinner before you go to your evening class?
I'll grab a snack at the break. That should hold me over till I get back.
What will the woman probably do? This is the end of Part A. Go on to the next page. Now read along as the directions for Part B are being read. Part B. Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear longer conversations. After each conversation, you will hear several questions. The conversations and questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Remember, you should not take notes or write on your test pages. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part B with the first conversation. Questions 31 through 35. Listen to a telephone conversation about student housing.
Good morning, Housing Office. How can I help you?
Hi, I'm calling about the new subsidized low-cost housing for graduate students.
Are you aware that it's only available to married graduate students and their families?
Yes, I think my wife and I may qualify, since she's still in graduate school. But I was wondering whether there were any other requirements.
Well, unless you have more than one child, you have to have a combined annual income that's less than $15,000.
I'm working as a part-time research assistant, so that's no problem. But right now we're living with my wife's parents. Does that mean we'd have to include their income too?
Not necessarily. Why don't you stop by our office so I can give you some forms to fill out and explain everything in more detail?
That sounds like a good idea. Would tomorrow morning be all right?
The afternoon might be better. It can be pretty crazy around here on a Friday morning.
All right then. I'll try to make it in the afternoon. Is there anyone special I should ask for?
You can ask for me, Susan Davidson, or my assistant, Bill Brown.
Number 31. Why does the man call the woman? Number 32. Where does the man live? Number 33. Why does the man believe he's eligible for low-cost housing? Number 34. What can be inferred about the man? Number 35. Why does the woman suggest that the man visit her office in the afternoon? Questions 36 through 38. Listen to a discussion about the Ice Age.
Hey, Jane. What's so interesting?
What? Oh, hi, Tom. I'm reading this fascinating article on the societies of the Ice Age during the Pleistocene period.
The Ice Age? There weren't any societies then, just a bunch of cave people.
That's what people used to think, but a new exhibit at the American Museum of Natural History shows that Ice Age people were surprisingly advanced.
Oh, really? In what ways?
Well, Ice Age people were the inventors of language, art, and music as we know it. And they didn't live in caves, they built their own shelters.
What did they use to build them? The cold weather would have killed off most of the trees, so they couldn't have used wood.
In some of the warmer climates, they did build houses of wood. In other places, they used animal bones and skins, or lived in natural stone shelters.
How did they stay warm? Animal skin walls don't sound very sturdy.
Well, it says here that in the early Ice Age, they often faced their homes toward the south to take advantage of the sun, a primitive sort of solar heating.
Hey, that's pretty smart.
Then people in the late Ice Age even insulated their homes by putting heated cobblestones on the floor.
I guess I spoke too soon. Can I read that magazine article after you're done? I think I'm going to try to impress my anthropology teacher with my amazing knowledge of Ice Age civilization.
What a show-off.
Number 36. What did the man think about people of the Ice Age? Number 37. How did people in the early Ice Age keep warm? Number 38. What does the man want the woman to do? This is the end of Part B. Go on to the next page. Now read along as the directions for Part C are being read. Part C, Directions. In this part of the test, you will hear several short talks. After each talk, you will hear some questions. The talks and the questions will not be repeated. After you hear a question, read the four possible answers in your book and choose the best answer. Then, on your answer sheet, find the number of the question and fill in the space that corresponds to the letter of the answer you have chosen. Here is an example. On the recording, you hear, listen to an instructor talk to his class about a television program.
I'd like to tell you about an interesting TV program that'll be shown this coming Thursday. It'll be on from 9 to 10 p.m. on Channel 4. It's part of a series called Mysteries of Human Biology. The subject of the program is the human brain, how it functions and how it can malfunction. Topics that will be covered are dreams, memory, and depression. These topics are illustrated with outstanding computer animation that makes the explanations easy to follow. Make an effort to see this show. Since we've been studying the nervous system in class, I know you'll find it very helpful.
Now listen to a sample question. What is the main purpose of the program? In your book, you read, A, to demonstrate the latest use of computer graphics. B. To discuss the possibility of an economic depression. C. To explain the workings of the brain. D. To dramatize a famous mystery story. The best answer to the question, what is the main purpose of the program, is C. To explain the workings of the brain. Therefore, the correct choice is C. Now listen to another sample question. Why does the speaker recommend watching the program? In your book, you read, A. It is required of all science majors. B. It will never be shown again. C. It can help viewers improve their memory skills. D. It will help with coursework. The best answer to the question, why does the speaker recommend watching the program, is D. It will help with coursework. Therefore, the correct choice is D. Remember, you should not take notes or write on your test pages. Go on to the next page. Now we will begin Part C with the first talk. Questions 39 through 43. Listen as a guide describes the ancient art of thatching a roof.
Welcome to the Four Winds Historical Farm, where traditions of the past are preserved for visitors like you. Today, our master thatchers will begin giving this barn behind me a sturdy thatched roof, able to withstand heavy winds and last up to 100 years. How do they do it? Well, in a nutshell, thatching involves covering the beams or rafters, the wooden skeleton of a roof, with reeds or straw. Our thatchers here have harvested their own natural materials for the job, the bundles of water reeds you see lying over there beside the barn. Thatching is certainly uncommon in the United States today. I guess that's why so many of you have come to see this demonstration. But it wasn't always that way. In the 17th century, the colonists here thatched their roofs with reeds and straw, just as they had done in England. After a while, though, they began to replace the thatch with wooden shingles, because wood was so plentiful, and eventually other roofing materials like stone, slate, and clay tiles came into use. It's a real shame that most people today don't realize how strong and long-lasting a thatched roof is. In Ireland, where thatching is still practiced, the roofs can survive winds of up to 110 miles per hour. That's because straw and reeds are so flexible. They bend but don't break in the wind like other materials can. Another advantage is that the roofs keep the house cool in the summer and warm in the winter. And then, of course, there's the roof's longevity. The average is 60 years, but they can last up to 100. With all these reasons to start thatching roofs again, wouldn't it be wonderful to see this disappearing craft return to popularity?
Number 39. What is about to be demonstrated? Number 40. What are thatched roofs made of? Number 41. According to the speaker, why did thatching die out in the United States? Number 42. According to the speaker, why does thatch survive strong winds? Number 43. According to the speaker, how might thatching become popular again? Questions 44 through 46. Listen to a radio news story.
A lot of people in the United States are coffee drinkers. Over the last few years, a trend has been developing to introduce premium specially blended coffees known as gourmet coffees into the American market. Boston seems to have been the birthplace of this trend. In fact, major gourmet coffee merchants from other cities like Seattle and San Francisco came to Boston, where today they're engaged in a kind of coffee war with Boston's merchants. They are all competing for a significant share of the gourmet coffee market. Surprisingly, the competition among these leading gourmet coffee businesses will not hurt any of them. Experts predict that the gourmet coffee market in the United States is growing and will continue to grow to the point that gourmet coffee will soon capture half of what is now a $1.5 million market and will be an $8 million market by 1999. Studies have shown that coffee drinkers who convert to gourmet coffee seldom go back to the regular brands found in supermarkets. As a result, these brands will be the real losers in the gourmet coffee competition.
Number 44. What is the main topic of the news story? Number 45. What probably leads people to choose gourmet coffees over regular brands? Number 46. What will probably happen in the future to stores that sell only regular brands of coffee? Questions 47 through 50. Listen to part of a talk in an art history class.
You may remember that a few weeks ago, we discussed the question of what photography is. Is it art, or is it a method of reproducing images? Do photographs belong in museums, or just in our homes? Today, I want to talk about a person who tried to make his professional life an answer to such questions. Alfred Stieglitz went from the United States to Germany to study engineering. While he was there, he became interested in photography and began to experiment with his camera. He took pictures under conditions that most photographers considered too difficult. He took them at night, in the rain, and of people and objects reflected in windows. When he returned to the United States, he continued these revolutionary efforts. Stieglitz was the first person to photograph skyscrapers, clouds, and views from an airplane. What Stieglitz was trying to do in these photographs was what he tried to do throughout his life, make photography an art. He felt that photography could be just as good a form of self-expression as painting or drawing. For Stieglitz, his camera was his brush. While many photographers of the late 1800s and early 1900s thought of their work as a reproduction of identical images, Stieglitz saw his as a creative art form. He understood the power of the camera to capture the moment. In fact, he never retouched his prints or made copies of them. If he were in this classroom today, I'm sure he'd say, "Well, painters don't normally make extra copies of their paintings, do they?"
Number 47. What is the professor mainly discussing? Number 48. What question had the professor raised in a previous class? Number 49. What does the professor imply about the photographs Stieglitz took at night? Number 50. Why did Stieglitz choose not to make copies of his photographs? This is the end of Section 1 of Practice Test D. Set your clock for 25 minutes and begin work on Section 2.